Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Markings system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur on Daf Samach Beis, and on the upper part of the page you will notice a Mishnah. Lo seitse isha b'machat hanekuva, a woman shall not walk out on Shabbos from a private domain into a public domain with a machat, a needle, hanekuva, that has a hole in it. This would be associated with a sewing needle. Velo b'tabas sheyesh alei choisem, nor with a ring that has a signet on it, a ring that is used for making an imprimatur. Velo b'koliar, velo b'kovelis, velo b'tzluchas shel plaiton. Rashi points out that koliar and kovelis will be explained in the Gemara, and the tzluchas shel plaiton. Plaiton itself Rashi calls mashcha de farsim, a type of fragrant oil. V'im yotzeso chayeves chatos de Rabbi Meir. If she did go out with any of these things, she is considered in violation of Shabbos on a Torah level. Rabbi Meir considers these things as being a non-tachshit. They're not ornamental, and therefore they're called a masui. The Rabbonon are lenient with regard to these two elements, the koveles, which we did not explain, and the tzluchas shel plaiton, as they would not be considered a Shabbos level violation. Now, the Chachamim use the term potron over here, which at this point simply means that it's not considered a Shabbos level violation. Before we continue in the Gemara, let's glance at the topic heading on the side under our Nosei, where we have written the following: Dvorim Shehem Tachshitim Li'ish. Things that are considered a tachshit, something that's ornamental, decorative, as is the case of jewelry, something that are considered tachshitim for a man. Ha'im nachshavim tachshit le'isha. Would it be considered a tachshit vis-a-vis a woman? Kegoin, an example of this would be tabas, shetachshit le'ish v'eina le'isha. Something to do with rings. We're being somewhat general right now. We'll see more in the Gemara, a tabas, which would be considered a tachshit for a woman, for a man, and not for a woman, v'chein lepech. Similar, the opposite, something would be considered a tachshit for a woman and not a man. We just have to emphasize, when we mention ring, we're being very general. There are different kinds of rings, as we already saw, rings with signets and rings without signets. In the Gemara itself, we'll notice another a marking that appears, a double underline, and under our Mivneh heading, this is explained as Shlavim, Lahasbir, these are stages to explain as Divrei Ula, what Ula says here, Sheomar Legabi Tabas V'chilufehen Be'ish. Ula will tell us that the opposite is the case with regard to a man, and we'll try to understand what he means. So the Gemara, Omar Ula V'chilufehen Be'ish. The word Ula's teaching, Rashi points out, is going on the issue of the ring. So and he says the opposite is true with regard to a man. And now let's take a look at Rashi. Omar Ula V'chilufehen Be'ish. At Tabasko, he's going on the ring. The Tabas Sheyesh Alav Choisem, a ring that has on it an imprimatur. Im Yotza Potter, if a man were to wear a ring Sheyesh Alav Choisem and walks out with it, he would be exempt. The Im Ein Alav Choisem, and if the ring that a man is wearing is a smooth ring, we'll say, or a ring without a choisem on it, then V'yotza Chayav Chatos, and he would be in violation of a Shabbos Torah level violation. Shabbos, a Torah level Shabbos violation. The term Chatos is a reference to a sin offering. That's when one violates something on a Torah level inadvertently, he would have to bring a sin offering. Now, we continue in the Gemara. Alma kosover ula. This is stage one of our ula analysis. So we want to figure that ula holds kol midi de chozi liish lo chozi liisha. That which is fit for a man is not fit for a woman. O midi de chozi liisha lo chozi liish. And that which is fit for a woman is not befitting a man. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises a Tanaic source. And in this source, we will try to extract a principle, because this source won't focus on male versus female, but it will focus on something regular for certain people. Is it considered a regularity for others? And when we speak about regularity, we're talking in the context of Shabbos and being allowed to wear things out from a private domain to a public domain. So Rav Yosef raises the following objection from the source. Haroyim, these are shepherds, yoitzim besakin. Sakin is sackcloth clothing. Sackcloth clothing, which is common for shepherds to wear. V'lo haroyim bilvad omru. The permission, the leniency, or the allowance for wearing sackcloth clothing on Shabbos is not something limited to shepherds. Ela kol odom. Anyone, even though they're not regular in wearing it. It happens to be the common practice of shepherds to wear it. And the principle that we extract from here, courtesy of Rashi, is since it's regular for shepherds, and it's considered acceptable for them, it's considered, we'll say, right, acceptable, regular, so we can apply the following principle, that since it's a tachshit for this one, it's a tachshit for others as well. So to suggest that Ula is saying chilufein be'ish, and then concluding from that which is fit for man is not fit for a woman, this source would counter it. And it's claiming that since it's fit for one, it is fit for the other. Elo Omar Rav Yosef, Kosovar Ula, Ula in his comment, the Chilufein Be'ish, holds Noshim Am Bifnei Atzmon Hain. Women are considered a separate nation. Now, as such, they would be beyond the realm of what we suggested. Since it's fit for one, it's fit for the other. That can be said when you're, let us say, within the same literally the same nation or the same collective. But once you cross that line and say that Noshim are Am Bifnei Atzmonhein, so in fact we cannot apply the Migu analysis that Rashi mentioned at the first stage of the Ula analysis. Well, let's check this out. Esve Abai raises an objection. The source says Hamotzi Tfilin, one who finds Tfilin laying outside in a public area, and he finds it on Shabbos, and of course it's not fitting for the Tfilin to lie there. So one finds Tfilin on Shabbos, Machnison Zug Zug. He Zug is a pair. Pair is made of a head Tfilin and arm Tfilin. So that's called tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh. This is telling us that he puts them on one pair at a time. He might have found a pile of tefillin lying outside, so he puts a pair on at a time. Echad ho'ish ve'echad ho'isha. We've dashed underline echad ho'isha, a woman as well. And this would seem to correspond to the first point that was made, that since it's a tachshit for a man, it is a tachshit for a woman. If you would say that women are considered a separate collective, a separate entity, a separate group, then when you look at tefillin, mitzvah saseh shazman gromahu, tefillin are a time bound mitzvah. In other words, a mitzvah that has its specific times and times that it doesn't, that you don't fulfill it. That means it's zman groma, it's time caused. The whole mitzvah sasei shazman groma noshim pturos, and all positive commands that have a fixed time to them, positive commands will include something like tefillin, and it has a fixed time. Women are exempt. Now, if you're going to tell me that women are an am bifnei atzmonhein, they constitute a different collective, then and the tachshit for man wouldn't be considered a tachshit for a woman, and all then the woman would be the only woman's association with tefillin would be within the realm of a mitzvah, but they're exempt from that. So they're exempt, and it's not their tachshit according to the premise that noshim am bifnei atzmonhein. So how can this source allow a woman wearing tefillin on Shabbos and bringing them from a public area to a private area in that form, by wearing them? The Gemara responds: Hosam kosav Rabbi Meir laila zman tefillin hu v'shabbos zman tefillin hu. The source that indicates that a woman can wear the tefillin in from the from being found outside is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, who holds that tefillin are in fact not time bound. They can be worn, and there's a mitzvah of tefillin 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, including Shabbos. As a result, havele mitzvah aseh shelo hazman groma. According to this approach, the Rabbi Meir approach, mitzvahs, the tefillin are a positive command that is not time bound. The chol mitzvah say shelo hazman groma noshim chayovos, and all positive commands that are not time bound. Another example, a common example of this would be the mitzvah of mezuzah, the placing of a mezuzah on one's doorpost. That's not time bound, and it's a positive command, and women are obligated in that. Likewise, with regard to tefillin, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, and therefore, it is the tefillin are relevant to them, and therefore they can wear them in from the public thoroughfare to the private thoroughfare when they're found lying outside, and of course on Shabbos. As we continue in the Gemara raises a question, but it's a question that is focused on the Mishnah. Hence, you can see in our markings we have a semicolon so as to break the flow. This is a question directed to the Mishnah, and in the Mishnah we mentioned a woman is not to have a ring that has on it a choysim, and the thought being that she's wearing such a ring. And the Mishnah, we have Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah saying that everyone agrees with regard to the woman wearing a signet ring, she would be chayav achatos. But the Gemara's question is, why should she be chayav achatos? Is it not so that this is an unusual way of carrying something? V'hohoitzo kilachar yadhu. Kilachar yadhi. Kilachar yad is an expression meaning something done in an unusual way. When we speak about Shabbos violations on a Torah level, that's only when you do the particular action in its regular way. But if you do it in an unusual way, in a kilachar yad fashion, that is already outside the realm of a Torah violation. And yet the Mishnah indicates that wearing, for a woman to wear a signet ring, she would be in violation of a Torah level transgression. The Gemara answers. Now you'll notice that we have diamonds that appear, and on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei is the topic, and Mivneh, the structural note, these are Tshuvos L'She'ela Loma Hayotze B'Tabas Al Etzbo She'eino Tachshito, when it's a Tabas that's not their Tachshit, as is the case with a woman with a signet ring. Why chayav chatos? Is it not a case of carrying something in the unusual carrying fashion? In other words, when you carry something, you would expect you hold your hand, you hold it in your hand, not wearing it on, not on your finger. Elo Omar Rava, that is Omar Rava, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Beisha Gizboras Askinon. We're talking about a woman who is a treasurer. And a woman who is a treasurer, so she wears a signet ring, and her normal way for wearing it is on her finger. The Rashi points out that the woman treasurer wearing a signet ring, it's not a tachshit. Therefore, there is a violation. On the other hand, it's derech hoitzo, it's not kilachar yad, because she is a treasurer. You have a woman who is wearing a signet ring in a normal way of it being worn by virtue of her profession or her occupation as a treasurer. On the other hand, we can't forget that she is a woman, so it's not a tachshit for her. Therefore, you have her wearing it in a normal way, that which is not a tachshit. So therefore, there is a Shabbos, a Torah level Shabbos violation. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabba, Tirats To'ish. Rabba says, well, you explained, Tirats To'isha, let's read that again, that's Tirats To'isha. You explained our Mishnah regarding a woman and the signet ring. Ish, mai, iko, lememar. What about the man? After all, Ulo said, Chilufei be'ish, and that would mean that a man wearing a non-signet ring on his finger on Shabbos, he too is guilty of a Torah level violation. But what about the fact that it's kilachar yad, that it's the unusual way of carrying something? Elo omar rova te'omim. What Rava does is he'll explain in his way the case of the man wearing a ring and on finger and woman wearing ring on finger. In other words, we'll see Rava's approach, we'll call it a new approach, involving the woman as well. Rava explains, Ta'amim, and we broke this down to Aleph and Beis, because he deals with both genders. Ta'amim sh'odam noisim l'ishto tabas shi'esh olechoisim, the man who usually has a signet ring, he gives a signet ring to his wife, l'holicha l'kufsa, to put it in his storage box, and she slips it on her finger until she gets to the storage box. So it's normal for a woman, it's considered her normal way of carrying it by slipping it on her finger. A woman may give her husband an ornamental ring, a decorative ring, meaning a non-signet ring, to a husband to bring to the jeweler who will fix it. And so the husband will take the woman's tachshit ring, the ein ole choisim ring, to a jeweler, umanicha biyodo, and he slips it on his finger as his way of carrying it. Ad shemagia etzel uman. So we see that it is the derech hoitzah, it's the normal way of carrying rings by having them slipped on one's finger. And therefore, wearing it, the ring, outside on Shabbos while on one's finger is in violation of the Torah prohibition of hoitzah. Velo b'koliar velo b'kovelas. My koliar, Omar Rav, machbanta. From Rashi's description of this, he gives a French word. It would seem that it's something like a brooch that attaches two sides of a garment. But we say a brooch, meaning it would fulfill the same function as a brooch, but not an actual article of jewelry, but rather it's a device that attaches two edges of a garment to keep it closed. And Koveles, the Gemara says, Omar Rav, Chumrusa de Phylon. V'chein Omar Rav Asi, Chumrusa de Phylon. Rashi explains Chumrusa de Phylon. Rashi is found on the fourth wide line under the Gemara text. Chumrusa is a kesher, a knot. Shekoshu bo sam. Into this knot is tied a spice, shishmo filon, verecho orev, it has a pleasant aroma. And ubalaz, Rashi gives a foreign word. V'isho sherecho ra, toy anosoy olea, a woman who has a foul odor, possibly body odor, she will carry, or she will wear this on herself to be effective against the Reach Ra. Let us just bear in mind that when we speak about the Koveles, we saw in the Mishnah that the Rabbonan exempted in the case of Koveles. We continue in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, lo seitze b'koveles. A woman should not go out with the koveles. Ve'im yotso chayeves chatos. And if she does, so she's guilty of a Torah-level violation, and if she did so inadvertently, she'd have to bring a sin offering. V'chachomam omrim, lo seitze. Ve'im yotso p'tura. And if she were to go out into public thoroughfare with the koveles, this, which we said was the knot with the fragrance in it, she would be exempt from a chatos obligation. Rabbi Lezer Omer, yoitza isha b'koveles lechatchila. And Rabbi Lezer is most lenient and says she can go out with it as a first choice. B'mai komifligi, what is the basis of this controversy? We have a three-way controversy. Rabbi Meir sovar ma'asuihu. Rabbi Meir says the koveles is a burden. It's not a tachshit. Rabbonan savri tachshit hu. It is considered a tachshit, which is in the general realm of that which is ornamental. The tilmo shafu v'machvasuye. Our fear is here, as is the case with many other tachshitim, that she might slip it off and show it to her friend, and in the course of doing so, end up carrying it for Amos in the Rishus Harabim. The Rabbi Eliezer Savar Man Darko Lemirme. Rabbi Eliezer, who allows it, he explains that there's no fear of her slipping it off to show her friend. Who is, what kind of woman is regular in wearing such a thing? Lemirme is to place it upon herself. Isha Sharecha Ra, we're talking about a woman that has body odor. Isha Sharecha Ra, lo shofu machvi velo asi lusi arba amos brishus arabim. A woman that suffers from a foul odor, she won't slip it off and she won't come to end up carrying it for amos in the public thoroughfare. Just the, as far as translation is concerned, at the beginning of the line, shafus to slip it off, umachvi, and to show it to her friend. So she won't, if she has Reach Ra, so Rabbi Eliezer figures she's not going, there's no fear of her slipping it off to show it, so there's no possibility of her coming to the Isur of Arba Amos, of carrying something for Amos in a public thoroughfare. The Gemara asks, V'ha Tanya, but do we not have a Tanaic source, Rabbi Eliezer Poter B'Kovelas B'Sufus Shel Plaiton? Rabbi Eliezer Poter means he exempts from a Torah level violation. Just compare this, using the arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, with the arrow just above, you can see there, Rabbi Eliezer, and also use the dashed underline, there Rabbi Eliezer said above, Yoitza Lechatchila. Here he says, Poter. Poter means she is not guilty of a Torah-level violation, but it would appear that there is a rabbinic restriction. We even saw a shita like this in the name of the Chachamim above. But we're focusing right now on Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, lo kashya. There's no inconsistency or any contradiction in Rabbi Eliezer. Ha kikoi adi Rabbi Meir, ha kikoi adi Rabbanan. It all depends who Rabbi Eliezer is addressing, or in whose context Rabbi Eliezer is stating his opinion. So just to go on record, Rabbi Eliezer in fact holds it's mutter lechatchila. So why does he use the expression poter in this second source? So we explain that when he is in the context of Rabbi Meir, who says there's a Torah level violation, he uses an expression simply to counter Rabbi Meir. It may not reflect his own opinion, but it's there's a certain idea, if you will, that when Rava Machlokes and one opinion, let's say, takes an extreme position, the opposite opinion won't state it in the other extreme, but will state it simply in a more moderated fashion. So as to preserve that approach, when Rabbi Eliezer is addressing or is in the context of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir says there's a Torah-level violation, so Rabbi Eliezer notches one stage down. Once again, not reflecting his own personal legal position, but as a means simply of reacting to the extreme position of Rabbi Meir, the extreme stringency. So Rabbi Elazar moderates his response and says, "Poter ha kikoi ad rabbonon." Then, when he is in the context of the rabbonon, who at the outset said there is no Torah level violation, so Rabbi Elazar, notching himself one step down from that, tells you mutar lechatchila, which in fact is his own opinion. And here the Gemara spells all of that out. Kikoi ad Rabbi Meir, when Rabbi Elazar is literally standing opposite Rabbi Meir, means when he's positioned against Rabbi Meir. The Omar Chayav Chatas, Rabbi Meir, who said he's obligated to bring a sin offering indicating a Torah level violation, a very severe offense. Omar Lay, Potter, Rabbi Eliezer's response to Rabbi Meir is no, it's not a Torah level violation. He is exempt from the Chatas. Kikoy ad Rabbonon, the Amri Potter Avaloser, when Rabbi Eliezer is in the context of the Rabbonon, who at the outset said that there's no Torah level violation. They said there's an exemption from a chatos if one were to violate it, but also the Rabbanan do prohibit. Omar Ihu mutur l'chatchilus. Rabbi Eliezer, in reaction to the Rabbanan, says, no, it's allowed at the as a first choice. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Umay Rabbi Meir. Rashi explains, where do we find Rabbi Eliezer positioned against Rabbi Meir without the Rabbonan? In other words, we said in the Gemara that, well, the source where Rabbi Eliezer poter is because he was going up against Rabbi Meir. So where do we see that? Where do we see Rabbi Meir stating his position? And eventually, we would like to see Rabbi Meir stating his position with regard to the Koveles, and saying that for a woman wearing a Koveles, she would be Chayav Chatos, and then Rabbi Eliezer reacting directly to Rabbi Meir, once again, without the Rabbanan. Well, where do we see that? So the Gemara explains, Desanya, Lo, Seitse, we should point out just beforehand, first of all, on the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see we have a tuff that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. That means we have a long answer at hand. What the Gemara is going to do is going to cite a Tanaic source, which is not going to be 100% clear. And then afterward, on the third line of the Gemara, you can see v'hachi katoni, meaning there will be a restatement of the source, and at that point, things will be much clearer. So we begin. Lo seitze isha b'mafteach shebiyoda. A woman should not go out on Shabbos from a Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim with a key in her hand. And if she does so, she carries a key outside, she is guilty of a Chatos level violation, Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Lezer poter b'koyvelus u'betzuchus shel plaiton. Rabbi Meir exempts, in the case of these two articles, the koyvelus and tzluchus shel plaiton. Well, if Rabbi Eliezer is exempting in the case of Koveles, well, did we hear Rabbi Meir say anything about Koveles? It's kind of odd for Rabbi Eliezer to enter into a discussion mentioning as a reaction something that wasn't mentioned by the first opinion by Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara asks, Koveles man dekar shmo? Who man dekar shmo means who? The word dekar is for like the word zohar or mentioned. Who mentioned anything about Koveles that Rabbi Eliezer mentions that in his reaction? So the Gemara says, you got a point there, and Chisuri Mechaser V'Hochi Kotoni. The original source was stated in an abbreviated fashion. Literally, Chisuri Mechaser, something was left out, but thusly it is to be understood. And here we reread the source with the additional information. V'chein b'koyvelis. In other words, Rabbi Meir said that a woman shall not go out with a mafteach in her hands, with a key in her hands, and if she does, she's chayav achatos. She's guilty of a Torah level violation. Likewise, v'chein b'koyvelis, v'chein b'tzluchus shel plaiton, lo seitze. She shall not go out with it on Shabbos, v'im yotze chayav achatos. And if she does, she is obligated to bring a sin offering. Once again, a Torah level transgression has been committed. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, notice with our markings, we dashed underlined Koiveles and Chayeves Chatos, and this is Rabbi Meir's opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, Poter, the Koiveles, and here we dash on it, Poter, because we want to emphasize how Rabbi Eliezer is a reaction to Rabbi Meir's Chayev Chatos. And we said before that the term Poter is an appropriate term when you're going up against someone that says Chayev Chatos. So Rabbi Eliezer, Poter, the Koiveles, Basul Shal Plaiton. Bamed Vamamurim, Kishiesh Bohen Boisem. Rabbi Eliezer is willing to exempt if there is some bosem, some spice which produces the aroma that's in them. Aval ein ben bosem chayeves. However, if there is no spice in them, all that remains is an entity, the koiveles or the tzlufa shel plaiton, that absorbed the, we'll call them the vessels, absorbed the fine fragrance, but the actual material is not there. If that be the case, then even Rabbi Eliezer will acknowledge she is in a Torah level violation. This last point brings to the fore a topic that really isn't the focus of the Gemara over here, but the Gemara will tie it into that which is mentioned elsewhere, and we should say by way of prefacing what we're going to learn, if one speaks about the Isser Hoitzah, carrying items out into Shusha Rabim, generally speaking, there are shiurim, there are dimensions or sizes of different things that must be met before we can say there is a Torah level violation. In the realm of food, so food has a dimension or a size that, if it has that size and one carries it out to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it would be a Chiyuv Chatos or a Torah level violation. If the food is less than that minimum shiur, the minimum size, so there is no Torah level violation. And generally speaking, when we speak about Oichlin, the shiur of Oichlin is a kegorgeres, the size of a dried fig. Carrying out less than that, so it would not create a Torah level violation. What would happen if one has this Oichlin that's pochus mikashiur, and it is contained in a vessel? The vessel is used to hold this small amount of food. Now, is there a Torah level violation under such circumstances, carrying out the food less than the shiur in a vessel? So on the one hand, one could say that the vessel is tofel to the oichlin, it's subsidiary. It doesn't have its own identity, so to speak, because it's subsidiary to the food item. And if that were the way you would look at it, so then you wouldn't be obligated, or you wouldn't be in transgression or in violation of a Shabbos restriction, even though you're in effect carrying out the vessel. But the vessel contains food, and as far as being in transgression because of the food, that too you wouldn't be obligated for a chatos, because the food was less than the minimum dimension or shiur. We just mentioned spices. Spices, as far as their shiur is concerned, their shiur is kol shehu, because they produce a nice smell even with a very small amount. So in our mind, we're going to parallel the case of a spice that's kol shehu to food that has a shiur. Now, what about a case of there is no spice present at all? You have just aroma. So that might be paralleled, might. Now, we emphasize that this is just at the outset of the Gemara. That might be parallel, the aroma without any spice might be parallel to the case of oichlin pochos mikashiur, food less than the minimum requirement for Shabbos transgression. At the end of this source, we saw that if you have these vessels, the kivelis or the tzlichus shel plyton, that have no spice in them, no actual spice, all that there is aroma, there is a chiyuv chatos. In other words, there's a Torah level violation that took place. With all of this introduction in mind, we continue now in the Gemara. Omar of Ado Baravo, Zoy Seimeris, this would show us Hamotzi Oichlin Pochos Mikashur Bekli, if one carries out food less than the minimum shear in a vessel, Chayav, there would be a Torah level violation because of the vessel. The case of the koiveles or the tzluchos shel plyton that have no spice whatsoever in them equals kepochos mikashir bekli, would be parallel to the case of food less than the minimum shear carried out in a vessel. Domi, the kotani, and it said in the case of the ein bohem boisim, it said chayeves, that there is a Torah level obligation. Rav Ashi responds and says, "Bi'almo e'maloch poter." I will tell you in general, when you're dealing with the case of oichlin pochos mikashir in a kli, that there is exemption. In other words, as we said before, the kli itself is subsidiary to the oichlin pochos mikashir, and therefore there is no violation vis-a-vis the vessel either. V'shayni hocha, here in the case of the Ein bohen boisem, is this is a worse problem. De lesse lemamosha klal, there is no spice whatsoever. There's only aroma. So what you have is a vessel, the koivelis, and only aroma, and only the aroma, the smell, and therefore there we can't say that the vessel is subsidiary to something because there's no mamoshes, there's no actual substance to which the vessel would be subsidiary. Therefore, you have the vessel in and of itself, and for carrying that out to the Rishus Rabim, there is a chiyuv chatos. At this point in the Gemara, the Gemara will be leaving the realm of a standard halachic discussion and delving into more of a we'll call it agoda style Gemara. We open up with a pasuk from Amos, and since we were dealing with fragrant substances, we open up with a pasuk. Actually, just let us correct ourselves a little bit. It's true the Gemara will be delving into an Agoda type discussion, but the truth be told, the next few lines will still be of a halachic nature. We will notice some triangles that appear, and on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading, we have the triangles positioned in two different directions. They indicate a ma'akav. This is an attempt to keep track of a discussion. It's a ma'akav b'diyun im im l'shayech es ha-posuk ba'omos perek vav l'plyton. Should we associate the posuk that we're about to see to the element, the substance known as plyton? We now turn to the Gemara. V'reishis shmonim yimoshchu. The reishis shmonim means the choicest of oils you will anoint yourself with. Omar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, we should point out that this posuk is in the context of what's called ta'anugim, pleasures. So Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, ze plyton. The posuk v'reish shmonim yoshu is a reference to plyton. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Of Rav Yosef raises an objection. The objection comes from a source that deals in the general realm of items that were banned or restricted after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And it says in the source, Af al plaiton gozar, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, that's Rabbi Af al plaiton gozar, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, velo hodulo. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava ruled against or restricted plaiton, and his colleagues did not agree with him. Ve'i amris mishum tanug, if you're going to say, like Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel suggested, that the plaiton is something of a pleasurable nature, amai lo hodulo, why did they not concede to that? After all, upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, would it not be reasonable to say that there were restrictions in the realm of those things that we consider pleasurable? And plaiton, which is the mashcha de farsama, it's a farsama oil, it should be restricted according to everybody. Omar le Abaye. Abaye responds to Rav Yosef, and he has a long answer. You'll notice we have a long answer marking the tuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line, indicates the length of the answer. Abaye says, you can't prove from the fact that there are those that will allow the plaiton and at the same time conclude that it's not the subject of the pasuk, which was dealing with ta'anugim, with pleasures. Abaye says, ulatamech, according to you, Rav Yosef, ha dichtiv, ha-shoysim b'mizrike yayin, again, a pasuk in Amos Perek Vav, it says that those who drink their wine, b'mizrike yayin, Rav Ami v'Rav Asi chalmer kinishkenin, v'chad omar shemizarkin kisoyseyin ze loze. One opinion of mizrike yayin is it's a vessel called kinishkenin. It's a vessel that, according to Rashi over here, is a somewhat long type vessel that has two spouts or two openings, two mouthpieces to it. And you can swish the wine back and forth and it'll be drinkable from each mouthpiece. The other approach to mizrike yayin is a reference to those that sounds like they juggled cups full of wine or they tossed cups of wine to one another. So, hochanami, so to over here, the osir, are you going to say that kinishkenin are forbidden, the double mouthpiece vessel is forbidden, v'horavo baravuna iklo lebe reish galusa v'shoso v'kinishkenin v'lo amar le v'lo midi. Rabo visited the reish galusa and he was drinking from a kinishkenin and nothing was said. And this is a time after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So you see in the same pasuk something else that's we'll call pleasurable, tanug, and it's not restricted, even though it's after the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Reishis Shmona might also very well be plaiton. Ella, kol midi de is be tanug ve is be simcha gozru rabbonan. When we speak about things that were restricted, those are things that produce pleasure and produce simcha. However, to translate the word simcha, that's something that requires further analysis. If you want to say happiness, there's pleasure and happiness, so be it. So things that have both roles or both functions or accomplishments, namely they produce tanug and simcha, that is something the Rabbonan imposed their post-temple destruction restriction on. Avomidi de'isbe tanug v'les be simcha lo gozu rabbonan. Something that produces tanug but does not produce simcha, something that the Rabbonan did not restrict. So when you go back to the pasuk in Amos Vav that says reish shmonim yimashchu, and Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel says it's plaiton. Plaiton may very well be something that produces tanug, just like kinishkenin produce tanug. But by the mere fact that they produce tanug, create pleasure, that is not grounds for the Rabbonan banning them at the upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. As such, we can keep the pshat that Rav Yehuda gave to them to the Reish Shmonim as being Plaiton. The Gemara here continues with Amos, Perek Vav, more Psukim, and we will see that the Gemara talks about topics that we have under our topic heading on the side, Zilzul B'tznius, Mevia Puronis V'golos, being lax in the realm of modesty can bring punishment and exile. And this discussion goes till Samach Gimel Omid Aleph. So we continue, as we said, analyzing the pasuk in Amos Perek Vav. The pasuk says, "Hashoichem mita shein usruchem al arusosom." Literally, this involves people sleeping on beds made of ivory, and suchim is something that's foul. Arusosom, they're foul on their beds. Omar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. He offers the first explanation, and there is Rabbi Avo follows a few lines later with a second explanation. Rabbi Yossi says, "Malamet shei mashtinim mayim b'fnei mitoseim arumim." This indicates to us that they urinated in front of their beds while naked. Megadef bo Rabbi Avo. Megadef is a very harsh expression of disagreement. Megadef literally means he cursed this explanation. If that were the case, could you possibly explain the continuation of the pasuk? Hainu dechtiv lochein ato yiglu baroish goylim mishom demashtinen mayim b'fnei mitoisem arumim yiglu baroish goylim. The continuation of the pasuk says, therefore now you will go into exile at the head of the exiled ones. Could it be said that just because they have this this practice of urinating while naked in front of their beds, that is reason for them to be exiled? By the way, it is pointed out in the Rashi that the idea of the nakedness over here has to do with the fact that people who were sleeping in a unclothed fashion and they needed to relieve themselves, they wouldn't bother putting on their clothing. Was too much of a trouble for them, and they would relieve themselves right there. But as Rabbi Avo points out, it's hard to explain the pasuk of Hashoichem mita shein suchem arusosom as simply urinating naked in front of one's bed, because the continuation of the pasuk wouldn't make any sense. Elo Omar Rabbi Avo. Elu, the pasuk is really referring to something else. Elu b'nei adam she'ochlin v'shoisim zeim zeh. This is describing people that would eat and drink together with one another. V'doivkin mitoseyin zu b'zu, and they would stick their beds, attach their beds one to another. U'machlifin n'shoiseyin zeim zeh, and they would do what we call wife swapping. We're not talking about divorcing their wives and each one marrying the other one's divorcee, but they remained married and they each one had intimacy with the other one's wife. And the idea of the bed that's disgusting has to do with the male emission, the semen that doesn't belong to them. In other words, each woman has a zera that shouldn't be in her. You can see that we have a bracketed section, and we mention on the note on the side that in the brackets, Bisograim, there's Shlosha Dvarim Shigormin Anius, three things that can bring on poverty. So, that having been said, and we explained why we have the brackets, it could be pointed out that following the bracketed section, we're going to go back to issues and matters relating to things that could bring upon one exile and punishment. So we continue in the Gemara in the bracketed section. Omar Rabbi Avo, the Amri Law. Another version is B'masnisa Tana in a Tanaic source. The following information appears. Shloshet Vorim Mevim Es Olam Lidei Anius. There are three things that could bring upon a person poverty. Rashi says, "Lidanius, Damina Perik, Be'arvei Psochim." In the last parak of Maseches Psochim, it says, "Sora Danius, the angel or the minister in charge of poverty, Noviel Shmei. His name is Noviel. Noviel, the Noviel Korile. His name is Noviel, and he's called that because the word Noviel means something that is disgusting. And Ve'oyev Mokom Mius, he likes areas that are disgusting. Umashtin Mayim Lefnei Mitaso Hainu Mius, and one who urinates in front of his bed fits into that category. So one who practices something that is of a disgusting nature is simply summoning the force that is responsible for poverty. The Gemara now continues. We, after mentioning three things can bring on poverty, the Elu Hain, Hamashtin, Mayin, Bifnei, Mitasa Orum, one who urinates while naked in front of his bed. The Rashi points out here the issue of the nakedness is not a main factor here. It's the urine that one deposits in front of his bed. That's the problem. The mention of Orum, of nakedness, is simply that was common. And as we mentioned before, that people didn't trouble themselves to cloak themselves after having gotten out of bed for relieving themselves. Number two, Umezalzel Benetilas Yadayim, one who treats hand washing lightly, Vesheishto Mikalosoi Bufonov, and a woman who curses her husband to his face. The Gemara will go over these points, and the double underlining that you can see indicates that. And that we've mentioned under our Mivne heading, and we've also used a diamond that you can see featuring Rova, who explains each one of these things. So we go over the three points mentioned in the source. Hamashtin mayim b'fnei mitasa orum, omar Rova, lo amoron, elo demahader ape lepurya. Rava says that this practice can bring on poverty only if he turns his face toward his bed, which we'll see in a moment means that the urine is deposited right near his bed. Avol levaroi less lon ba. If, however, the stream of urine is projected at a distance, baroi literally means outside, but it means far away. That's how Rashi explains this. Less lon ba, then it is of no concern to us. It would be okay. Mahader ape lepurya nami lo amoron elo laara. The idea of urinating close to one's bed is a problem only if he's urinating directly onto the floor. Avo bimono less lonbo. If, however, he is doing so into a vessel, then that too would not bother us, and we wouldn't describe that as maybe lidanius. The next point. Rava says, and we should point out that what Rava is going to tell us will be, the Gemara itself will present an alternative opinion, but in the meantime, Rava is speaking, and he says that the problem is only regarding someone who doesn't wash his hands at all. And we're speaking primarily about we're talking about the mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim, that we're most familiar with that before eating a meal of bread. So Rava says that the problem is the case of one who doesn't wash at all. Aval Moshe v'lo Moshe, less lon ba. Moshe is a term with washing. Moshe v'lo Moshe means he washes with the minimum amount, which is called a revius. A revius is a liquid measure. In this case, a revius of water, which is the minimum amount. If he uses a revius of water, even though it's the minimum amount, then he's okay. There's no problem of poverty. To that, the Gemara says, "Valav milsi." That's not reliable. The Omer of Chista, Rav Chista says, "Ano mashoi maloi chofni maya v'yavuli maloi chofni tivusa." I instead of giving a literal translation, it will say that Rav Chisda says, I used a liberal amount of water. And as I used a large amount of water, way beyond the minimum revius quantity, and as a result, I was given a liberal amount of goodness, of wealth, indicating to us that if one were to wash his hands but using the minimum amount, he still wouldn't be worthy of receiving the liberal amount of wealth, and still the specter of poverty could hover over his head. Vishayishto Mikalosa Bafonov, the source featured a woman who curses out her husband to his face, Omar Rova, Al Isketach Shiteha. This is the case if he is being cursed out because he is not providing her with tachshitin. Tachshitin, loosely translated, has to do with the realm of jewelry and ornamental stuff that is commonplace for women to wear and enjoy. V'hani minhu de'isle v'lo ovid, the idea of his being subject to impoverishment as a result of her cursing is only when he has the means of providing tachshitim and he doesn't do so. But someone who doesn't have the means and she simply is a complaining type woman, bemoaning her lot, that is not something that we are concerned with over here. We continue in the Gemara. Dorash Rova Bre Derav Eloi. We have a note on that is a marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We have a number 1, and it's followed by a vertical dashed line. And following that is a number 2, likewise with that. Now, on the side of the Gemara, we've noted that Simanu Shnei Shlovim, we've highlighted 2 stages. There is the Goreim, the cause, and the Totsa'o. So we have a number 1 features a cause, and that will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara itself. But by way of structure, we have these next number of lines deal with the cause of the problem that will be featured, and then the result of the problem that's featured. We're turning to a we also have the house marking is what we've marked off to show the beginning of each one of these points. We're looking at a pasuk in Yeshayo, Paragimel, pasuk Tes Zayin. And as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice where the pasuk citations appear, in this case to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll see a lot of the words Shom appear as you go down the page. We're referring to psukim in the third parak of Sefer Yeshaya. We'll be looking at psukim Tezayin and later on at posuk Chavdalid. So the Gemara starts. Dorash Rova Breid Rav Eloi Mai Dichti Vayomer Hashem Yan Ki Govu Benois Tzion. And the Almighty says, because Govu means has to do with something tall. The children, the daughters of Zion, the Jewish women, what were they doing in this pasuk? Shayu mahalchus b'koyma zekufa. They were walking in a excessively erect posture. There's a proper posture, an acceptable way to walk, and then there's a type of walk that attracts attention, attention getting type gait. That is, in general terms, a non-modest way of conduct. And that's what is described here. They walked b'koyma zekufa in an overly erect fashion. V'teilachna netuyos goroin. What does that mean? Shoyu mahalchis okev betzad gudol. They were taking very short steps, where it was heel-to-toe type steps. There's a Rashi that you'll find the lower part of the narrow lines. Vatelachna netuyos goron shoyu holchos okev betzad gudol lemait behibucham, taking deliberately small steps to lemait to reduce their strides. Shoyu mistaklin ba, the men folk were gazing upon her, and she, what the women described in the pasuk, enjoyed that. The hishoy b'sel, she was delaying in her steps. V'derech noitin goron leilich benachas, those who cast their heads backwards, exposing their, literally, it's exposing their necks. Their style of one whose neck is extended, leilich benachas l'visheinu roya l'raglov. Naturally, if their necks are extended, so their eyes aren't looking where they're going. If their eyes aren't looking where they're going, they're going to have to walk very slowly. So that is what they were practicing. Umesakros einayim. The word mesakros, from the word sikra, so oftentimes spelled with a samach, and you can see that Rashi makes a point of that. Sikra is a type of cosmetic, and Rashi says the havu malin kuchla leinayu umeramzam. They filled their eyes with this cosmetic known as kuchla or sikra. The word sikra or misakra somehow reminds the English speaker of the word mascara. But for our purposes, it has to do with an eye cosmetic, and they fill their eyes with this alluring cosmetic. Umaramzon, they would gesture to the young men. Haloich v'tofoif. What is that? Shahoyu mahalchis aruka b'tzad tzora. Rashi points out that the pasuk is featuring married women were doing this. A tall woman would walk deliberately next to a short woman, and that again would be a method of alluring all the more so. U beraglein te'akasna. What is that? Omer Yitzchok Tebeir Rav Ami Malamed Shematilos Morva Farsam Bimen Aleihem. The women, and as Rashi mentioned, these are married women. They filled their shoes with mor and afarsam, different types of fragrances, Bimen Aleihem, in their shoes. Umahalchus Bishuk Yerushalayim. They would walk in the public markets of Yerushalayim. The Kevan Shemagias Etzah Bachur Yisrael. And when they would get to some young men, obviously not their husbands, boyatois bakarka, they would kick the floor, umatizis lan, the fragrance by their kicking action on the kicking on the floor would release the fragrance, umachnisois bohen yetzora, the evil inclination would enter the young men, keeres bakos, just like the venom of an angry snake. Basically, these are married women attempting to arouse all kinds of other young men. And naturally, this is a reprehensible behavior. My poor Anu Sehem, what is their punishment? So, up till now, as we mentioned in our structural note, up till now we were dealing with the problem, and now the result. So, Kedidorish Rabo Bar Ula, the posuk there in Yeshaya, it's in the continuation of that perek. Paragimel Pasuk Chavdalid, and you can see with our markings, we're underlining the psukim as they're quoted, the phrases as they're quoted. The Hoyo Tachas Boisem Mok Yeh Mokom Shoyim Mevas Mois, the part that of their bodies that used to be full of aromas of fragrances. Bo nase nemokim nemokim is going to be replaced with nemokim is an area, is we'll call it in general speaking with bruises. There are different expressions that the Gemara uses to describe this, different types of bruises or sores, we'll say, sores that be filled with pus and other disgusting things. So where they used to apply their perfumes is now going to be filled with nemokim. Fetachas chagura nikpa. What is that? Mokum shul chagurus b'tziltzil, part of their bodies they used to gird themselves with these fine belts. Nase nikofim nikofim. Also an expression of something that is called it sores. V'tachas maise miksha korcha. What is that? Mokum shul miskashtis boy. The parts of their bodies that they used to decorate themselves. Rashi says, "Miskashtois hainu seor shesorkos umefachasos." Has to do with all kinds of hairdos. That's which used to be where they used to make up their hair. Boy nase krochen krochen will now be filled with baldness. The Tachas psigiu machgurasak. What is that? Psochim hamavin lidei gila. The openings, which the word psigil, Rashi says, is a no tricone, is an abbreviation of Pesach gila, which is a reference to the place, the orifice of intimacy. So that opening, you lemachgures sak, will be replaced with sackcloth, or literally will be bound or tied with sackcloth. Ki tachas yofi. Rashi on this says ki tachas yofi. Three lines from the bottom. Rashi says ki kol eile yavo lecho tachas yofiech. This, all of punishments mentioned, as you saw, we saw sores, baldness, sackcloth, they come, tachas means where originally there had been the beautification. Omar Rava, Hainu Damri Inchi, based on this, there is the common saying, Chalufe Shufra Kiva, the in exchange or in replacement of beauty, is Kiva. Rashi says, on this he uses a French word, lecha, which would be something like pus. So instead of where there was beauty, there's now kiva. V'sipach Hashem kodkoid benos tzion. This is a posuk in the same perek, perek gimel, posuk yud zayin. Omer Abiyosi Reb Chanina, malamed sheporcha bohen tzoras. From this posuk, v'sipach Hashem kodkod no sion, there's an indication of, that there was tzoras that they suffered from. Ksifocha, in this pasuk it says v'sipach, uksifosim, in the case of negoyim, of tzoras, it says v'loseis v'losapachas. So you can see the word sapachas similar to the word v'sipach. The pasuk says v'ashem posein yo'oreh. Rav Shmuel, this is this pasuk goes back to the Sefer Yeshaya. What is ve'es poshen yo'oreh? Chad omar shenishbechu kekiton. Rashi says shofchis dam ziva, that the women started to release female blood flow. Like a ketone is a flask that holds liquids, they just would spill out with their blood. V'charamar shenasu pischein kiyar, their orifices the orifice of the woman that we mentioned before would become overgrown with a confluence of hair like a forest. And as Rashi says, v'nim osos l'tashmish, it make them disgusting or reprehensible. With regard to intimacy. Omar Rav Yudah Marav, Anshe Yerushalayim, the people of Yerushalayim, and it's a reference to this general context, they were Anshe Shachatz Hoyu. They were foul. Rashi says, Medabrin Beloshen Gaiva V'lagei Sofa. Their speech was, we'll explain it certainly in the context of the Gemara. Their speech was with we'll call foul overtones or intimations. Adam Omer Lechavero, And you have to understand that we can offer, on the one hand, there's a literal translation to what they, there's a literal translation of the words, but we will be explaining along the way as to what they were really saying. So what we'll do, we'll first read the Gemara, just to give a, just to create a certain sense of flow, and then go back over the translation. So, Adam Omer L'Chaver, a person would say to his friend, Bameh so'adeto hayom, b'pas amelo, b'pas shein amelo, b'yayin gordeli, oy, b'yayin hardeli, b'mesev rochavo, b'mesev kotzer, b'chover tov, b'chover ra, Amar Rav Chista, b'kulon l'znus. Rav Chista says that all of these seemingly innocent expressions were really all with a znus, an immoral implication. So now we'll go over this these a couple lines with the translation and what was being intimated. Odom omer lechavero bameh, the bottom line of Gemara, bameh so'adeto hayom, literally is what did you eat today? But Rashi says so'adeto is tashmish, has to do with intimacy. B'pas amela or b'pas she'eno amela. Literally, it would be was it kneaded bread or not unkneaded bread? But their real intention was pas amela. Rashi says, did you have intimacy with a be'ula, a woman who was already who had already experienced that, or eino me'elo would mean a virgin. They continued. The yayin gordeli, did you have? Now yayin gordeli is white wine. O at the top of samach gimel aleph, the yayin hardeli. The Rashi at the top though explains what yayin hardeli is, a dark wine, a black wine. However, their kavona was, what was the complexion of the girl? Was she white? Was she light complexion or dark complexion? The mesev rochav, mesev kotzer, literally is a wide bed. Mesev is what you recline on, or was it a narrow one? However, the Rashi explains their intention was she a corpulent female or a skinny, a thin one? Bechover tov, bechover ra, was it good company or a bad company? So on this Rashi says, was the woman attractive or not? And Rav Chista points out, as our translation, or as our explanation indicated, but kulon lezlus, it was all a discussion surrounding immorality. You might say, on the other hand, at least they couch their expressions in nice speech, but nevertheless, the Gemara takes them to task. The Gemara continues on the third line from the top. Omar Rachbo, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Atzei Yerushalayim shel kinamon hoyu. The trees of Yerushalayim were kinamon, very possibly associated with the English word cinnamon, similar sounding word, and especially if you look at the C in its phonetic possibility, kinamon would be the same word. Ubishah shehoyu masikin mehen, and when they would light this wood with fire, Rechon Noidef Bechor Israel, the fragrance could be sensed all over the land of Israel. When Yerushalayim was destroyed, Nignazu, these trees were hidden away. Velonishtair Elo Kisaira, and there remains only a barley grain of this wood. Umishtakach beGizoy de Tzimtzimoy Malkus. Tzimtzimoy is a name, and it's found in the treasuries of Queen Tzimtzimoy. Gemaras of this nature are very likely containing a hidden message, so that what we have done is we fulfilled the translation level of explanation, but beyond that, if one is interested in a deeper meaning, one would have to research this further. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.